Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl from Deviant Legion Network. And with us tonight is one of our favorite guests. We love the man to death. And this is Joe Baton, director of Sister Tempest, and of course his newest film that just hit the festival circuit, The Wheel of Heaven. So, hello, Joe. How are you?
Hello, hello. Doing good. How are you doing, Carl?
Oh, I'm keeping out of trouble now in Memphis, you know, getting the lay of the land and all that sort of good stuff. But
it's a cool
what's going on
with town.
You? Oh, it's a great town. You know, we'll talk about that later. But basically, I just want to give you a chance to talk about The Wheel of Heaven and how it's been doing on the festival circuit and just give us an idea of, well, this is kind of a hard question, what the hell is it about? And all that sort of good stuff.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, Wheel of Heaven, we'll start off with that. For anybody who doesn't know about the film, it's a feature film coming out this year. It's going through film festivals right now. But it's a mini-series that's inside of a feature film that's inside of a cable access TV channel. And so you're watching this kind of mini-series play out. But also the channel will change on you sometimes, and sometimes it'll go to commercials, and the episodes will end, and so you'll have to sit through credits and commercials and et cetera. So, but the thing is that everything really tells the story. Even the stupid commercials at times will continue the story in some weird way. So everything involved, even the chaos involved in the story, is still telling the narrative of this woman who picks up a choose your own adventure novel in a thrift store, and you watch her read the book, and you watch her as the character inside of the book, and then you also watch us shoot the film, and you watch all the behind the scenes drama that happens in the film, and all of these storylines that are happening all merge together at the end in a big vortex of insanity. And I know that doesn't make any sense at all, but that's about the closest thing I can come to a pitch for this film.
Well, for those that aren't familiar with Joe's films, I have to go back to Sister Tempest, which then it got inside my ear. But particularly Sister Tempest, that was the first thing I ever watched of yours, and I was just like blown away. I got a little story. So I've been calling you the micro budget Jodorowsky, and you've heard me say that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
My former partner, Stephen Ronquillo, who is a big Jodorowsky fan, he says, nobody's good as Jodorowsky. I don't care what kind of small budget he has. I thought you would appreciate that.
Awesome. I love that. I mean, it's the truth. I mean, nobody is. Like, it's an honor to say that, but I hate to be compared to anybody like that, because I don't feel like, you know, he's done so many amazing films and plays and art exhibits, and he's just so prolific. The man is fucking genius. So,
oh, yeah.
But thank you. I can say that I'm like in Slidell. I'm in my little town that I live in. I'm the best filmmaker there is. So there you go.
Okay. Slidell is finest. I like that.
That's right. That's right. But right now the film's going to festivals. We just won Film from Hell at the Nightmare Film Festival. We won Best of the Fest at Sin City Film Festival and Stuff Film Festival. And I know we won some other things, but I just can't remember off the top of my head right now. I know Callie's won a few awards, which she was just great in the film as well. So it's exciting. It's exciting to see what the film's doing right now, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, Callie, let's talk a little bit about Callie, because she actually plays how many roles? Four, I think, in the film?
She plays at least four. She might play five, but I just can't remember.
Yeah.
If you count,
it's at least four.
If you count the birthing scene, which I guess is a grown-up purity, which you don't see again. So, yeah, there's definitely four characters, but we tried to jam in as many characters for Callie and for Jeff Pearson as possible. Jeff plays at least three. He might play four as well. But Jeff plays Mr. Universe and Dr. Universe and the Harry the Mechanic. And so there, it's just the idea of, like, the atypical female and the atypical male, and that, or the typical, I should say typical female and typical male, not atypical, what I'm saying. But it's like that perfect representation of a male person and perfect representation of a female person, and those two people are colliding. And even in the back behind the scenes footage, you see me as that male representation colliding with Callie. And so the whole movie is all about the male-female relationship and how domineering males can be even without realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the main, like, subtext to the film, at least. So,
okay, so we have that. Now the other thing too is that this The Wheel of Heaven actually had a predecessor, a short film that actually is now part of the whole film. Why don't you talk about how that all worked out and how this grew into a feature film?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a long story. My cinematographer, Daniel Raghorn, funded the Blood of the Dinosaurs, which was the prologue for Wheel of Heaven. And what happened was he just said, hey, let's make another short film. Here's a little bit of money. You know, not much, but let's make a few minutes of a short film. And so I was tasked to write a 5-page short film. And I ended up writing a 40-page short film. And so I went, well, I got 40 pages. And what I could do is I could break off the first chapter and call it a prologue, and we could, like, film that. And it kind of works as its own short film. But then it can also be attached to this other film. And so we all agreed to it. And we shot Blood of the Dinosaurs and ran back through the film festivals and had a great run, had a fantastic run. It played at Fantastic Fest. It played at Fantasia. It played all over the planet. And so I used that momentum to then do a Kickstarter for Wheel of Heaven. And we used that to raise $25,000, I think, or $20,000, something like that. And we raised that. And then we use that money to shoot the rest of the film, that is The Wheel of Heaven, which still isn't any money at all. $20,000 is like pennies.
Oh, Nick.
Like, really, nobody really got paid. It was just all just paying for the actual film. If you know, once people watch the film, they realize, like, that every penny is on the screen. We have so many, like, costume changes and so many giant, like, scenes with tons of costumes and hair and makeup, and it was ridiculous. And I was trying to squeeze off every deal I could. but the film definitely doesn't look like it's a $20,000 film.
No, not at all. And that's one of the things I really want to focus on, and what we try to focus on here at Deviant Legion is, of course, micro budget, and what do you do when you don't have the money. Now, one of the things is with your actors and that you basically have formed a family of people that work and that believe in what you do. And I think that's very important to understand. I mean, what Callie does as far as acting, what Victor does, in his role, I'm just amazed at the commitment. Because trust me, I think you have to be committed to be in one of your films. And I'm talking to my doctor. Maybe I'll be in your next one.
Well,
what do you expect from it?
You know, I think if you're just nice to people, and if you feed them well, and if you just let them be themselves, you say, listen, we're not making any money out of this, but I will give you artistic freedom to whatever role that you play. You can have fun with it. And this is just having fun. And you'd be surprised how many people just want to get out there and have fun. And as long as you're not, like, mean and you're not expecting too much, you know, like, that. This is another reason why I don't put in a lot of stunts in my film and my films. I don't put in a lot of things that would end up exacerbating the actor to feel like they don't want to do it, or the crew to feel like they're doing it too long. So everything I do is with the cast and crew in mind, to make sure it's maximized fun and just in freedom. You know, I feel like that's important. Anybody who works with me, I think, knows that. So as long as you keep that, you know, you're acting like it's a big family. You're making sure everybody's happy. Then people want to work with you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also think, you know, you talked a little bit about how big and how large the film looks like. I mean, your costumers and your hair people, boy, they must have had a lot of fun, because that looked like a lot of work. I mean, seriously.
So much work. And this is another thing that I'll do, is that we had multiple costumers, multiple hair and makeup people, and that is just to not wear anybody out. And so I know some directors might feel like they'll get an uneven, like, look to their film if they use multiple costumers and multiple makeup artists. That's all I'm trying to do, is get an uneven look. That's what I'm going for. So I'm leaning into all of the imperfections that I have, which I don't have a lot of money, so I can't afford, like, the same makeup artist every day, because they would have to quit their job for, you know, a month just to work for me. So I end up having to work with, like, four or five different makeup artists and four or five different customers, and et cetera. But I think that makes it even more exciting. Like, I get to work with this one family, the Roebucks, in Jackson, Mississippi. And it's Cammy and TV and Derek and their dad, which I can't remember the name right now. Don't hate me. But those guys are, like, really fucking amazing. They're out there living like they want, like however they want to. Like, the dad is a clown, like, by profession, and the mom is a seamstress, and they all work together making short films, and so they believe in what I'm doing, and so I've been able to work with them, and what we did together was they built the all the spaceship, the interior spaceship scenes in the film. And those scenes were incredible. And they spent so much time and energy and money into that interior of the spaceship. And you can feel the love in those scenes just from the set design. And so we just had so many people like that working with us, that especially after having done God Inside My Ear and Sister Tempest and Blood of the Dinosaurs, there's a proven track record. And so we had so many people working on this film that were really pouring their hearts into it. And I feel like we gave them all that we could give them, like, back. I feel like we really, like, we took that investment and milked it for all that it was worth, because there's so many different set changes and so many different location changes and so many different wardrobe changes. It's ridiculous. I can't believe we've got it. Honestly, it's a miracle.
Well, I understand that completely. I mean, you know, I look at your films and I know what basically the budget is, and I look at them and like, they look fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I mean, it's also a good cinematographer. You know, Daniel Wyborn is just incredible. And one thing I learned early on with filmmaking is that it doesn't matter how cheap your props and wardrobe are, if you have a really good cinematographer, they'll make all that shit look like $1 million. And you can look at The Hobbit compared to like Lord of the Rings. And with The Hobbit, they're shooting on that super HD shit that looks like shit. And all the shit looks like Halloween costumes because it's too detailed. It's not the right kind of cinematography. But there's that good kind of cinematography like Daniel Wyborn does that just makes everything look like $1 million. And so that's a big key to low budget filmmaking. I think when you get higher budget, you can kind of get away with maybe worse cinematography sometimes. Lower budget, sometimes you have to like look for a good cinematographer. If you want to do stuff that feels believable, but you're on a low budget, a cinematographer can hide a lot of zippers. So anyway.
Okay, well, that's a good point. So now that it's gone through the festival circuit, what's happening with The Wheel of Heaven now?
Well, it's still going through the festival circuit. So it has about another 6, 7, 8 months of life left on the festival circuit. At this moment, we're just waiting on festivals to hear back from them. There's like a weird little lull in January, February, where there's just not any festivals that I've submitted to that I'm waiting to hear back from. So like March and April, everything's going to be popping again. And we'll be playing in some more festivals, but I don't know what those are yet, which is like weird. So like everything's like in a weird limbo with the film. But at the same time, I'm also submitting to distribution companies right now. And I have a few different companies looking at the film as we speak, and I'm waiting on that as well. So like the movie is literally just in limbo. So yeah, that's the news. Which is no news. But the good news is that everything's submitted. Things are like, the wheels are in motion. It's just waiting, you know.
Well, you know, I certainly wish you lots of luck in finding a distributor. So I guess the next question is, do you have anything happening as far as your next projects or what's going on as far as that's concerned?
Yes and no. I'm kind of on the back. I'm putting films on the back burner for at least the next year or two, mainly because I have been neglecting my art business, which is the business that actually pays my bills. And so I'm kind of like getting back into being an artist for a little while, which is still art. It's still like creating. So that's exciting.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that because we really haven't discussed that. I mean, we've talked about you being a filmmaker. Now I know in your past you've done production storyboards and things like that, and that's sort of how you got started. But what do you do with your art, and how do you sell it, and what type of art? And give us like a good idea of what you do.
I tell people that the best description I can give to it is this: one night, because okay, let me back up. I sell my art in New Orleans, on the streets of New Orleans, to drunk people, basically, to drunk tourists. That's what I do for a living, on Frenchman Street in New Orleans. And so my art is like pop culture, right? It's a lot of like Batman and Baby Yoda and shit like that. But then there's also like I do a lot of realism, and I do a lot of collage and kind of Dadaism. And I do a lot of erotic art as well. It's a weird bag that's all kind of mixed together. And I do a lot of religious things as well. And so all those things are kind of mixed together and sometimes all in one piece of art as well. And so I had this one older lady walk up to my booth one night, and she looked at my art and said, "Oh, this is cartoon surrealism." And so now I just tell people that's what it is. So I do cartoon surrealism, which is pretty close to what I do. I've been working with a lot of video collaging as well in my artwork through QR codes. And I also have been working with a lot of lenticulars, which are kind of holographic prints and printing, which I also work into my artwork. It all kind of doesn't make sense, me talking about it. It's more like better if you just see my art, if you Google my name and look at my artwork, it makes a little more sense. But yeah, it's mainly like I came out of comic books and now I do kind of surrealist comic book art, you know?
Have you ever considered getting your stuff published?
I did comics. Yeah, well, I've been published through comics for years now. When I was a comic book artist before just becoming primarily visual, I have a few comic books out there. I think my most successful is this one called Frankenbabe that's about this undead stripper that goes around killing people or goes around fighting for justice. But that was a fun one that I created with a friend, Matthew Johnson. But that one's been like reprinted a couple times, shit, which is neat. But I've kind of gotten out of that because doing comics like secular artwork, like the sequential artwork like that, it's just a lot of time. It's a time investment with very little money in return. And so so what I do now, selling my artwork in New Orleans, it's a much better return on my artwork investment.
So you're based in New Orleans, or you do a lot of your selling in New Orleans. Does that as a setting come through in your art? I mean, we're getting on to, of course, Fat Tuesday here not too long from now, a couple of weeks. And of course, right. Mardi Gras. I'm wondering if that's an influence in the music and everything. Does that have a lot to do with what you do also?
Very little. Honestly, like I grew up in and around New Orleans, and because of that, it's kind of like not a huge deal. It's kind of like New Orleans is cool, like very cool. Like I've learned to appreciate it more as I get older. But you know, when you grow up around, like if you grew up around Orlando, like Disney World's not like as huge of a deal as everybody makes it out to be. It's kind of that sort of deal where I love New Orleans, but I'm not going to do anything about red beans and rice or alligators. You know, it's like I don't really give a fuck about that shit. I love jazz, and I think that's a huge influence for me in New Orleans, is the love of jazz more than anything else. And the diversity in New Orleans is beautiful. The culture's one of the greatest cultures on the planet. But I don't celebrate it a whole lot in my artwork because I want to raise above my culture. I want to raise above my area. And I want to be something more cosmic than earthly. That's what I mean by raising it.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, I want to do things that are more spiritual, and I think those things transcend a section of a planet, and I think that's what I mean by what I'm saying. So, yeah.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And of course, you know, we've had you on a number of times. We know that your background, you know, at one point you were involved in as a minister, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, youth minister. You know, all this sort of like comes through, you know, and we've talked about this before, particularly with Sister Tempest. I mean, I caught so much religious iconography and so on and so forth. We've discussed that before in previous podcasts. But what really interests me, and one of the reasons I think your films are important, is because they're unique. And you go toward, you know, you embrace that like no other independent person that I've talked to, you know, because your films are just not unlike anything else on the micro budget end, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you. But I think I'm just trying to, I think the biggest thing is I'm just trying to be honest, and that's more than anything, is I'm really trying to, like with my artwork, like my visual art, I've had to sell out a lot visually. In comic books, I've had to like draw for other writers, draw things that I never wanted to draw before, pandering to audiences just to get sales of art of whatever it is. And when I stepped into doing film, I just didn't want to pander at all. I wanted to pander to myself, and that's it. And that's what I mean by being honest. I just wanted to, like, say honestly, do I like this? Do I want to do this? And that's all I want to do. And I don't give a shit if everyone that I work with hates it. I'm going to do the thing that I feel like I want to do. And one thing I do want to do is collaborate. So I give freedom. I give a ton of freedom to everyone I work with. But in the end, I have final say, and in the end, I have final cut, and that's like super important to me, is to create something that I feel personally proud of, and I've never really felt like I've done it before until I worked in film, until I've directed my own films, and especially I feel like with Wheel of Heaven, I just said fuck it, I'm doing what I want to do. And I'm going to be honest and true just to myself, you know.
Well, I think that comes through also, and I just would like to tell our listeners that if you haven't seen Joe's films, particularly people at ISF and film and stuff, you got to check them out, because you're not going to find anything like it. And I think that's the mark of someone who's unique and very, very talented. And I'll always say that about you, Joe. So you know that. I'm one of your big fans. So before we go, I just wanted to give you a chance. You know, we were talking about your artwork and that. So just tell us where we can see your films, where we can find your art, and take the next couple of minutes to really promote the fuck out of yourself, man. Do it.
Well, you can find me on various sites like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, or whatever you want to call it. If you just look up my name, Joe Badon, J-O-E, and then B-A-D-O-N, like bad on. And then joebadon.com has got my film site, although I need to update it pretty badly. And then there's joebadon.blogspot.com has artwork. Also, if you go to Etsy and just look up Joe Badon again, you can check out my Etsy shop. Also, if you look up God Inside My Ear and also Sister Tempest, if you just Google that, it's on Tubi for free. I think you can also buy it on Amazon, on DVDs and Blu-rays. So those are my first two
pieces. Buy it.
And also, if you just like Google my name or Google any of those films, God is on My Ear, Sisters in the Mist, or Wheel of Heaven, they all have trailers online. They all have clips where you can watch multiple clips of the film. So you can watch the shit out of the film, really, before you even decide to watch the film if you like that. You know, whatever. So, and yeah, that's about it for me.
Well, listen, you're always welcome to come back. And one thing I would like to really say at this point, you know, you love film as much as I do, and we're doing a bunch of commentary watches. And if there's anything you'd like to do, a quick commentary with any of us here, we'd be glad to do that. Just to give you an idea, I'm going to do a little bit of housekeeping right now. On Wednesday afternoon, Bill Reynolds and I will be doing a look back on the films of Hal Hartley. But on Thursday, and this is why I mentioned this to you, Joe, we have the three Joes. It's you, there's a gentleman by the Joe Bartone, who's a director out of L.A., but also Joe Black, who's out of L.A. Joe Black and I have decided to do a monthly commentary on the films of Elliot Gould from the 70s. And on Thursday, at 6 p.m. my time, or 6 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Pacific, we're doing a commentary watch. This will be our second. This one will be I Will for Now. Last month we did Harry and Walter Go to New York. We're going to do one each month. And if you're not doing anything in film and you're doing your art and you want to have fun, think of something you want to do a commentary watch, because you and I think, would be a blast together.
Yeah, that'd be fun. The last one was a lot of fun.
You know, so consider that. Anything that happens, please let us know, and you're on immediately. Seriously,
Sounds good. You're always welcome
here.
Sounds good.
Well,
so
any other things you want to say before we get off of here and go on to what else we have to do tonight?
I mean, just thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it. It's always an honor and a pleasure, for real.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure for sure. I'm not so sure about the honor. But it's great to have you on, and you're always welcome, and we're a big fan. And anything that happens, you let us know. And again, thank you very much for being on, Joe. Really appreciate it. And thank you guys for listening. All right?
Yes.
So at that, I think we're going to say good night, and we'll be in touch, Joe. All right?
Bye.
All right. Good night, people.